Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street, singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop.
This is a group called Buffalo Springfield, in case you don't know, in case you're too young to remember. I'll educate you in with a little bit of music education. So who sings on this? Buffalo Springfield, an American band formed in 1966. Stephen Stills, Richie Furay, Bruce Palmer, Dewey Martin, and Neil Young. So they record this song called For What It's Worth. How does it get the song For What It's Worth? Supposedly... When Stephen Stills pitched it, he told the record label guy, for what it's worth, we've got one more song. And they, and that's how this song got its, that's how this song got its start. It is a protest song, but it's not what people think it is, right? People thought it had to do with, the anti-war protests, or people thought it had to do with the Kent State shooting, but not. The Buffalo Springfield breaks up, I want to say, in 1968, after recording a bunch of music. They're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, right? Crosby, Stills, and Nash, along with Neil Young, go on to form Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. And then Jim Messina combines with Richie Furay to form the band Poco, which some of you older people might have heard of. And then, this song's released in 1967. It has to do with a curfew on the Sunset Strip in 1966. So the music clubs got pretty popular, and Buffalo Springfield is playing, is the house band at a pretty famous bar on the Sunset Strip called Whiskey A Go-Go. And the local people are getting pissed because there's so many young people in the streets late at night that they're causing traffic jams. And so they go to City Hall, and they want the police to enforce a stricter curfew starting at 10 o'clock. But music fans thought that infringed on their civil rights. So anyway, there's a big demonstration. And Los Angeles, you know, music, you know, rock and roll stations, you know, announced that there'd be a big rally outside of the Pandora's Box, which was a music club on Sunset Boulevard. And so, yeah, Peter Fonda, Jack Nicholson out there, right? It was all like 60s shit. Anyway, so that's what the song's about. That incident. So anyway, identified with the 60s and protest movements. Breaking news this morning, and I'll play the audio right here. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff marked out his territory a little bit today from the President of the United States. And so it'll be, we'll see what happens over the course of the next couple hours when the flamethrower-in-chief fires up his Twitter account. You know, there's articles, you know, that have come out the last couple days saying that he was ready to fire Secretary Esper, right? And over the weekend, but was talked out of that. So we'll see General Milley in a very public way and very deliberately stakes out his position as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and apologizes for being involved in the president's photo opportunity outside of St. John's. So so let me play the audio that's, again, maybe, I don't know, an hour or two old at this point. So this is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and he's speaking in recorded comments from, there might have been live and being piped over to the graduates of National Defense University.
Different races, genders, religions, and orientations working to accomplish their mission in peace and war all over the globe. Our troops demonstrate every day their ability to thrive as a result of their diversity. The diversity of America is one of the core strengths of our nation, and it is therefore a core strength of our military. And while the military sets an example for civil society through our inclusiveness, we too have not come far enough. We all need to do better. For example, although the United States military has a higher proportion of African Americans serving in our ranks than in society at large, only 7% of our flag and general officers are African American. The Navy and Marine Corps have no African Americans serving above the two-star level, and the Army has just one African American four-star. The United States Air Force will soon swear in our first African American service chief, an achievement long overdue. We cannot afford to marginalize large portions of our potential talent pool or alienate certain demographic groups. No. We need all the talent that American society can muster. Our responsibility as military leaders is to ensure that each and every one of our service members is treated fairly, with dignity and respect, and each of them is given equal opportunity to excel. We must, we can, and we will do better. So what can we do? We will collectively take a hard look at how we recruit, retain, and promote talent within our services. We must ensure that diverse candidates have equal opportunity to branch into the career fields and serve in the key positions most likely to produce our future senior leaders. And we must ensure fairness and equity at all key gateway selection boards, including promotion, command, and war college. We must take advantage of the diversity committees, the councils, and the offices in each of the services to identify best practices in talent management and act on them. Mentorship also plays a vital role. All of us in the military must engage in more meaningful mentoring today. So how do you do that? As senior leaders, we reach down into the pool of rising stars among our troops from all walks of life and put into action what you've learned in your career. None of us got to where we are by ourselves. We all have had a helping hand. Take an active interest in providing the next generation of leaders the tools they need to succeed. And be inclusive. Make a commitment to seek out and surround yourself with those who don't look like you, think like you, and who come from different backgrounds. Specifically, reach out to junior officers and enlisted members whose background is different than yours and mentor them. It may be uncomfortable at first, but you will help them grow into future leaders, and they will help you grow to be a better leader yourself. Equality and opportunity is a matter of readiness. It's the basis of cohesion. We fight wars as teams, and we cannot tolerate anything that divides us. Let me conclude with two simple pieces of advice based on 40 years in uniform that you may find useful, as many of you will surely go on to be flag officers. First, always maintain a keen sense of situational awareness. As senior leaders, everything you do will be closely watched, and I am not immune. As many of you saw the result of the photograph of me at Lafayette Square last week, that sparked a national debate about the role of the military in civil society. I should not have been there. My presence in that moment and in that environment created a perception of the military involved in domestic politics. As a commissioned uniformed officer, it was a mistake that I have learned from, and I sincerely hope we all can learn from it. We who wear the cloth of our nation come from the people of our nation, and we must hold dear the principle of an apolitical military that is so deeply rooted in the very essence of our republic. And this is not easy. It takes time and work and effort, but it may be the most important thing each and every one of us does every single day. And my second piece of advice is very simple. Embrace the Constitution. Keep it close to your heart. It is our North Star. It's our map to a better future. Though we are not a perfect union, believe in the United States. Believe in our country. Believe in your troops. And believe in our purpose. Few other nations have been able to change for the greater good. And that is because of the rights and values embedded in our Constitution. The freedoms guaranteed to us in the Constitution allow people to demand change, just as the peaceful protesters are doing all across the country. That is why we serve in the military. On day one, you and I, we all swore an oath to support and defend the Constitution and its essential American principle that all men and women are born free and equal. That is the foundation of our military ethos, who we are as service members and as an institution. All of us in uniform are willing to die for that idea, the idea that is America. And so we must also be willing to live for that idea, for freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom to peacefully assemble, and freedom to vote, and freedom to believe as you wish in your religion. These are essential freedoms that are the cornerstone of our country. Americans have spilled their blood to protect them in the past, and they continue to be worth fighting for. This we will defend.
So that's the chairman, Joint Chiefs of Staff, probably less than an hour ago, maybe an hour and a half ago. And essentially carving out his spot as the leader of the uniform leader of America's military. So, again, only cricket so far from the White House. Again, you know, the president, you know, fights with all kinds of groups on a regular basis. His fight with the U.S. military, I don't think, is one that he wants. Because conservatives will then begin to look at him and say, "What's going on here?" And again, I somebody texted earlier. What about his General Milley's duty to take orders from those senior to him, right? And so let me read you the oath that an officer in the United States military takes. I state your name, do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which I'm about to enter, so help me God. The So that is the that's the officer oath of office, right? It doesn't say anything about, you know, obeying the orders of the officers senior to me. That is the enlisted oath, right? And I'll read that to you, and you can just so you understand. There's a nuanced, right? There's a nuanced difference. So this is from the oath of enlistment from the United States Army. I state your name, do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, and that I will obey the orders of the President of the United States and the orders of the officers appointed over me according to regulations and the Uniform Code of Military Justice. So help me God. Okay, so there's a difference. So it'll be interesting to see if I didn't think that Secretary Esper would survive Saturday, and he did. So the question is, will General Milley survive the day? So stay tuned, more to follow. So good morning to you on a Thursday morning, and we shall see. We shall see what happens with all of that. But again, I mean, my opinion on that stuff is that, you know, General Milley's right. His appearance in that photo, I think was inappropriate, as was Secretary Esper. So the plot thickens, as it always tends to do. But here's what I think, that, you know, when you look at, right, ultimately civilian control of the American military, you know, I thought when Secretary Esper had his press conference last week and he said that we're not there yet. Now, to me, he's got to amplify that, right? In consultation with the president, I advised him, we are not there yet. Okay, and should this proceed, or should he proceed, you know, I will submit my resignation. Now, that's essentially resigning, right? And, you know, again, he's telling the nation that he doesn't support, you know, the president's decision, and it's his duty to resign because there is civilian control of the United States military. And if he will not execute the orders of the President of the United States, then he should resign. So now, with General Milley, I think that he's rightly staking out his turf relative to the Constitution, that the American military is an apolitical organization, and that the perception of him in the president's photo op at that church, right, was inappropriate. And he said, and that's what his comments reflect that. So interesting stuff this morning. Interesting stuff this morning. A couple other things that are interesting. Yesterday I played, I talked about the New York Times and their decision, which is one of a series of decisions made by publishers to fire people that are the custodians of their opinion pages or are editors of their papers. And so I want to play a little audio for you about that. The guy who wrote that piece, the piece is entitled The Media Self-Censors. Right. And so I think, you know, the issue is intolerance. And so he recorded a little something that's on the Wall Street Journal website. And so let me play this for you. It's about 3 minutes and 30 seconds. So here's And again, he writes on the opinion page of his name's Daniel Henninger, and the piece is he writes a series called Wonderland, a series of opinion pieces for the Wall Street Journal. The title is "The Media Self-Censors." The subtitle is "The Pre-Liberal Idea of Settling Disagreements with Coercion Has Made a Comeback in the United States." So this is him. Well, it's going to start with Ronald Reagan.
History will record with the greatest astonishment that those who had the most to lose did the least to prevent its happening. Well, I think it's time we ask ourselves if we still know the freedoms that were intended for us by the founding fathers.
Ronald Reagan's A Time for Choosing speech in 1964 seems pertinent today as a reminder of what we stand to lose by devaluing the principle of freedom of speech. Nothing lasts forever, and so it is in America today, where the pre-liberal idea of settling disagreements with a system of coerced thought has made a comeback. At the New York Times, its staff forced the resignation of the paper's editorial page editor following publication of an op-ed from Senator Tom Cotton titled, "Send in the Troops."
I thought op-ed pages were supposed to be about sparking debate, not stifling it.
For James Bennett to be forced out as editorial page editor is not only a surrender by the New York Times to the staff revolt, but it was a betrayal of the very things that Bennett and the publisher, A.G. Sulzberger, had eloquently argued for when they initially defended the Tom Cotton op-ed, which is the willingness to publish views that go against the paper's liberal philosophy.
Nor is this an isolated event. A similar incident occurred at the Philadelphia Inquirer, which published a piece titled "Buildings Matter Too," about the damage done to the city's architecture as a result of violence there. Staff members took offense, protested, and within a week, the editor was out. Getting fired for a headline that says "Buildings Matter Too" sounds like a scene from George Orwell's Animal Farm. The issue here is not about the assertion that racism is endemic in the United States. The issue is the willingness by many to displace the U.S.'s system of free argument with a system of enforced opinion and censorship. Right now, we're at the stage where writers and media personalities participate in the enforcement effort.
Show me where it says that protests are supposed to be polite and peaceful.
Before the end of the Cold War, thought coercion was enforced by...
That was Chris Cuomo from CNN, by the way, just so you know.
...the East German Stasi, eloquently brought to life in the movie The Lives of Others, about the surveillance of non-conforming writers. Today, instead of the Stasi, we have social media platforms keeping track of dissidents. Some will say it is preposterous to liken this to the Communist Party. But social media is a party-like phenomenon of ideological and psychological reinforcement, with its constant reminder memes such as "silence is violence." The ingeniousness of this strategy of suppression and shaming is that it sidesteps the Supreme Court's long history of defending unpopular speech. If people have shut themselves up, there is no speech, and so there's no problem. But there is a problem with diminishing the freedom to speak.
As someone who spent many years making speeches, I've quoted many definitions of freedom, some very moving and eloquent. But I've always liked George Orwell's blunt and unadorned statement. He said, "Freedom is the right to say no."
So, he also appeared a little bit ago on Fox News with Ed Henry talking about it, and that to me is pretty important.
The Great Society.
Pretty important issue, I think, in the country. You know, are we a nation that respects the First Amendment? And you know, one of the things that he alluded to there and that he expands on a little bit here is the first time I think most of us saw the brutality of this kind of phenomenon was the, you know, you read about young girls being body shamed or young people being attacked and then committing suicide because of it. It's the first time I can kind of recall these, the kind of mob-like behavior and power of the internet, right? I think that's the first time I recall seeing it. Like what's going on? What's happening here? And reading stories, you know, mostly, you know, written about actions mothers had taken or parents had taken on behalf of their kids who were just being bludgeoned on the internet because of something they did, something they said, or because somebody didn't like them. So here's another little audio clip of Daniel Henninger this morning talking about this issue.
Just this week, the editors of two different newspapers and one magazine have been ousted from their post after they were called out by staff and readers for decisions viewed as being at odds with the protests currently gripping the nation. Our next guest has written about the matter and what he says threatens free speech in America today in an op-ed titled, "The Media Self-Censors, the Pre-Liberal Idea of Settling Disagreements with Coercion Has Made a Comeback in the United States." Joining us now is Dan Henninger, deputy editor of the Wall Street Journal editorial page and a Fox News contributor. Dan, good morning.
Good to be with you, Ed.
It all kind of started with the New York Times op-ed editor having to resign for running an op-ed, which was his job, that a lot of people disagreed with.
Yeah, it did. That was actually the editor of the entire editorial page who was forced to resign because of the Tom Cotton piece that said, "Send in the troops." Less noticed was that then the editor of the Philadelphia Inquirer newspaper, the editor, had to resign as well, basically fired, because he ran an op-ed called "Buildings Matter Too." Ed, the idea that you would get fired for something called "Buildings Matter Too" sounds like an incident in a political satire, like George Orwell's Animal Farm or 1984. Not working in the newsroom of an American newspaper, which for nearly 250 years has been protected by the First Amendment. Journalists can say anything they want about anyone, but now they're disallowing people who appear on their opinion pages from saying the same thing.
What's the balance?
It's a remarkable development.
Indeed it is. But what's the balance when you have people who were upset about that Philly Inquirer? Again, it was an op-ed, as you say, so people should be allowed to have their opinions. But the headline suggesting buildings matter, yes, they do, after all of the looting. But we're having a conversation about Black Lives Matter. And there were some people clearly offended by the idea that buildings were being equated with lives.
Yeah, but the editor, to repeat, got fired. He lost his job. I mean, you can't get to the point in the United States where if you say something with which someone disagrees, the other side uses the implicit threat of driving you out of your job. Mm-hmm. I mean, two other editors, the editor of Bon Appetit magazine, of all places, and Refinery 29, the women's website, also have resigned over issues like this. Look, Ed, the founding fathers understood that disagreements could be intense. They knew there had been political bloodbaths in Europe for centuries. And that's why they decided that we would allow people to express their opinions and settle them in elections. But to protect that, they created the First Amendment, in which it literally says we have freedom of speech. And now it looks like these the staff of some of these newspapers are setting up a coercive system that more resembles the systems that existed in Eastern Europe during the communist regimes before the Cold War, when people knew they had to shut up or they would lose their jobs.
Mm. You write in this column, "The issue is a willingness by many to displace the American system of free argument with a system of enforced, coerced opinion and censorship, which forces comparisons to the opinion control mechanisms." As you noted a moment ago, in Eastern Europe during the Cold War, free speech is not dead in the United States, but it looks like more than ever, it requires active defense. This is a serious matter. Is the First Amendment on the line in America right now?
I think the First Amendment is under a lot of pressure in the United States as we get people being pressured to conform their thinking. And I think the mechanism for doing that is not that we have a Communist Party in the United States, but we do have social media. And the reinforcement mechanisms of social media, the shaming powers of platforms like Facebook and Twitter, which we saw used years ago against adolescent girls. I mean, they would be humiliated and ostracized from their group. Now that same dynamic is being used in a larger way, with Twitter and Facebook basically being used as censors to track down people who dissent from the party's point of view. And on this, in this instance, it's the point of view on race in America. Mm. If you just fall out of line once, Ed, you are liable to lose your job. And that is not a system that we have been familiar with in the United States for centuries. But I think it's arriving now.
No doubt about it. It's on the doorstep. And so is your column. Read it this morning. We appreciate your thoughts.
So, Daniel Henninger, you can find it in the Wall Street Journal. You got to pay for it, though, unless you can find a way around that, which I don't know. The Wall Street Journal locks that stuff up pretty tight, so good luck. But it's an interesting column about, you know, what is, I think, something we've all grown up believing in, that is this idea of free speech, but not so much anymore. If you say, you know, things that go against the narrative, then, you know, you're to be shouted out, you know, of the organization, be it a business, be it a university or whatnot. So again, which flies in the whole face of, you know, the way I think, and what I know people enjoy relative to the media is smart people being asked hard questions, articulate discourse, having to footnote, you know, their answers, and pushing something towards, you know, to a better place. And that's the way it happens. It happens with discourse. And, you know, the things that we've been talking about over the course of the last few weeks, you know, are, you know, Black Lives do matter. Okay, so, you know, once we identify the problem, that we believe that the incidents that we see, 9 or 10, depending on whose database you subscribe to, in 2019 and 17, 16 or 17 in 2018, that's too many. Okay, and and so we want to take that down. So we've identified that as a problem. We want to take that down. Okay. So if you won't allow an open discussion of those incidents, then your solutions is bullshit. It's going to be a bullshit solution. And so to me, you know, the question is whether the measures that we'll take here to solve the problem that somebody's going to identify, is that going to be meaningful and drive those numbers even lower because it recognizes all facets of the problem and seeks to address them? Or will they simply be what we see so often in this country, which is political snapshots? You know, we'll rip down the Confederate monuments, we'll rename something else, you know, we'll run those people out of their jobs, and then we'll move on. And I will tell you this, I think that it's pretty telling. You know, we can talk all we want about affirmative action, we can talk about all we want about, you know, people talking about this, right? Talking about these ideas and how important they are, that Black lives do matter. But then you look at, you know, you look at the makeup of their companies, and they're not representative of, you know, the nation, demographically, racially. They're not representative of it, right? And so are they close? Do they vary within a tolerance of it? And when the answer consistently comes back no, then you have to say, well, wait a minute, what's going on? Why not? Right? Why not? And so, to the extent you see that, those are legitimate questions and come up in a open discussion. But that is under, you know, that whole idea of an open discussion is now under attack in the United States. And it is a, it's a technique that's been taught to young activists, right? This is how you run people out, okay? And it's all done in the digital space until you can get it on video. And then what you have is you have this emotional moment on video, okay? And that's what you then put out on Twitter, put out on Facebook, and everybody watches. These powerful, you know, it doesn't have to be reflective of what's real. It just has to be reflective of what you're advocating. And then you put it out there, and then you threaten the business owner, or you threaten the publisher, or whoever the dean, or whoever the hell it is. This is what we want, or else. And you raise, and you use multimedia platforms to do that. And you would think, again, I go back to the show yesterday, you would think that the publisher of the New York Times would be savvy enough to that, would be experienced enough, would be, you know, would understand this dynamic in our culture, especially relative to journalism. And that the nation's quote unquote paper of record would have the moral fortitude, right, knowing how important its example is to stand up for free speech, but it didn't. So, interesting. General Milley in the news, and also the third, the third story, and I talked about it here for a second, was, you know, as lawmakers, you know, begin to hold hearings and deliberate, will they do anything beyond the photo ops and the camera? Will they investigate the issues? Will they try to address it? And I'm not very optimistic. You know why? In a presidential election year, they're going to do that? Yeah, I think not. So good morning to you on this Thursday morning. The United States Marine Corps Band is about to make this official. Last night we recorded the Lynch Kenny Cosentini thing, so you're not going to hear any discussion of General Milley's remarks earlier, which is a shame. But you will hear them, and we'll talk about some of the stuff. So, good morning to you on a Thursday, the 11th day of June in the year 2020, an interesting time in our nation's history. And I have one other thought. Why don't we just cancel playing the national anthem at the start of sporting events? I saw a headline that says USA Soccer says that you no longer have to, you know, stand for the national anthem. So what is the national anthem is now going to be, you know, a fucking carnival for anybody's protest that decides it? You know, then why don't we just skip it? It's a sporting event, for God's sakes, or it's something else. You know, do we need to do that? If all it is a canvas for people to express themselves, then, you know, it's not really honoring America. Although I can hear it. No. We're honoring by our protests. And when I disrupt it and talk out loud and don't recognize it, that's my right under the First Amendment. I don't really have to stand there to honor it. Why don't we just stop the charade, okay? Say, look, we're not there anymore. You know, Elvis has left the building. No more national anthem. Just play the fucking game, okay? And let's not have a piece of recreation, right? Let's not have a piece of recreation that jams, you know, a protest, right, down my throat every time I want to watch a sporting event. I mean, I go there to escape, right, to watch something, and I'm going to have to watch that. Some, you know, soccer player, you know, some other athlete I don't care what they think. Don't watch it. Or, you know, maybe we should just don't put it on TV. I mean, I guess if I'm there in person, I guess I will have to tolerate it. What I perceive to be somebody else's disrespect to the nation that provides them all the freedoms and all the security to do that. They cannot not even stand and honor this experiment in democracy with all of its warts, which is still the greatest and most free nation on the planet. Can't do that because they're pissed. So now I've got to have that shoved in my face. So my idea, let's just stop doing that. Not going to bother me. Let's just go watch. We'll go watch the game, whatever the hell it is. But I don't want to have whoever's protest. If they want to go to a protest, I mean, obviously that's their business. I don't care. But I don't want to be forced, you know. I don't want to afford a protest forced on me, right? I don't want that. So can we just cancel that? I mean, we don't need it. Just go watch the game, right? Play ball. Drop the puck. Whatever, right? Just a thought. So on that thought, United States Marine Corps band makes this morning official. Ironic, right? Good morning to you. Taking shit. I will stand, cover my heart, and sing by myself. That's fine. And another email. Give an inch, they'll take a foot. Sing louder, stand taller. Okay. All right. You know, it bothers me. Okay? It bothers me. 7,000 Americans have given their lives in our global wars on terrorism. And we stand as a nation to honor, you know, our nation. And, you know, in the midst of that, I'm not happy with whatever, you know. It's not just Black Lives Matter, but I'm not happy because we're not free in Seattle to have our own independent government downtown. And so I'm going to throw a fit, right? It bothers me. It more than bothers me. It makes me angry, you know, because my impression, and this might be unfair, is that, have you honestly ever seen the sacrifice that happens in this country? Right? Ever walked into a hospital that has a bunch of military dudes in it and hear them breathing on machines, hoping to get stabilized so they can, you know, go to Germany, but we're not sure that they're going to be stable enough. They might die here and we're trying to stabilize them. And the answer to that is no. I mean, all that's theoretical bullshit to them. Right, and this protest that they're a part of is the only thing that matters. So they don't realize that they've won the ovarian lottery to live in this country. And so in my opinion. So they shit on the American flag. And I don't want to watch it. I don't want, maybe then it's on me, Max, just show up 5 minutes into the game. Maybe that's what I should do. Don't turn on any sporting event until, we're in the, a couple of minutes into it. Maybe in the middle of the first inning or some shit like that. But I mean, that bothered me. And those people, they don't make it. They get buried. The only life they'll ever have, they gave for this country. And they're buried underneath that flag. And we as Americans can't come together to honor this experiment in democracy, these freedoms we have, and that sacrifice that has allowed our nation to continue to evolve in this experiment in democracy. And so, yeah, it makes me angry. It makes me angry. I don't want to watch that shit. So, yeah, I'd just rather not watch it. I know. Give them an inch and they'll take a mile. I don't want to watch it, though, because it makes me really angry to watch that, to think that that memory, that sacrifice, is just a bullshit event to them. It's just a bullshit event to them. So this is dedicated to all those people that have given their lives throughout the course of this nation's history so that people can turn their backs on our flags, can be disrespectful to it in the name of whatever their protest is, the protest du jour, right? So this is dedicated to all those people who didn't want to be in a national cemetery with a piece of marble sticking out of their forehead at the age of 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, whatever, 16 or 17 in some cases. All right. It's dedicated to them who gave everything they had so that I guess people could turn around and thrash it.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
Once you're out of the Corps, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right, time to check the weather. Currently, it's cloudy and 80 in the vicinity of the nation's capital, Quantico to be exact. It is cloudy and 80 at Marine Corps Base Camp Lejeune. Don't see that very often down the coast. Sunny and 86 in 29 Palms already, so it's going to be a warm day out in the desert. Camp Pendleton reports sun is 75. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dawn, cloudy, and 73. Camp Butler in Okinawa, dark, cloudy, and 82. In South Central Afghanistan, it is evening, clear, and 88. And in the Al Anbar province of Iraq, it is sunny and 101 degrees there. Currently, at the home of All Marine Radio, where we're looking for a high of 80 degrees today, thankfully. It is sunny and 73 right now. Yeah, looking for a high of 80 today. And then on Friday, 71. Saturday, 73. Sunday, 74. And then in the mid-70s next week. So, yeah, this 90s stuff, not so much, man. I'm not about it. All right, we'll take a break. We come back, we'll check some news headlines real quick. And Lynch, Kenny, and Cosentini join me. And again, we recorded it last night, so you will not hear them waxing eloquent about General Milley this morning. And just for the record, so far the flamethrower-in-chief has not reacted publicly to General Milley's comment. So we stand by to see if he'll continue in that capacity. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All right, to the news we go. Headlines that you'll read about. nation's top military officer, says he was wrong to accompany Trump on church walk. So played the audio. So you heard it in, verbatim, as General Milley said it. But, I think it's important what he said. He's not supposed to, the U.S. military is supposed to be apolitical. And if the president wants to go, take some of his political appointees to go over and do a photo op at a church, then let him take his political appointees over there. But it's inappropriate, certainly, for the chairman to be involved in that. He's not one of his political guys. And so so I think General Milley's absolutely correct. And so we'll see what happens. But that's a lead story right now in Stars and Stripes. And again, news breaking here in the last couple hours. A couple more stories in that are prominent. Taiwan intercepts Chinese fighter jets in its airspace after U.S. plane flies over the island. Again, in the game of chicken that we play in the South China Sea and the East China Sea now, the president said that he will not even consider stripping army posts of Confederate names. I would prefer that he would have said, I will stand by for the recommendations of the Secretary of the Army. And we talk about that here in the upcoming hour. And one other story from Stars and Stripes. And that is the destroyer USS Kidd returns to sea 6 weeks after making a port call to deal with the coronavirus outbreak. It was working down in Southcom AO on counter-narcotics missions. And COVID-19 cases aboard the USS Kidd sent it back to San Diego. So it got underway yesterday from San Diego. And the guided missile destroyer is scheduled to return to its mission supporting counter-narcotics operation in the Caribbean and the Eastern Pacific Ocean in U.S. Southern Command's area of responsibility. Let's see. I want to see if they're giving out any numbers. The crew number is about 330. The Navy has not disclosed the exact number of Kidd crew members who tested positive. So that's interesting. Some of the more interesting data relative to COVID-19 comes from the United States Navy. The Theodore Roosevelt numbers are very interesting because of the kind of cocoon they were in. From top story in Just the News is, why do younger black voters like Trump more than elders? A UCLA study explains that. So that's news today there. From USNI News, the Fat Leonard scandal continues to roil, as in send shockwaves through the Navy. The retired Navy captain, CPO, plead guilty to bribery charges in the latest Fat Leonard development. A retired Navy captain who collected nearly $91,000 in favors for sharing classified U.S. 7th Fleet ship schedules and steering logistics contract to a foreign defense firm will plead guilty, according to federal court documents. The plea marks the latest conviction in the Glenn Defense Marine Asia corruption investigation. Retired Navy Captain David William Haas, who served as a 7th Fleet's operations officer on its flagship, the USS Blue Ridge, from August 2011 to July 2013, was indicted on 8 counts, 1 count of conspiracy to commit bribery, 6 counts of bribery, and 1 count of conspiracy to commit honest fraud. What in God's name is honest fraud? Isn't fraud inherently dishonest? Honest fraud. Honest services fraud is defined in the United States Code, also known as the Federal Mail and Wire Fraud Status, as a scheme or artifice to deprive another of the intangible right of honest services. It is a federal crime, and it is broadly applied across the United States. Who knew? Never even heard the term. That's interesting. Let's see. The federal grand jury alleged Haas had collected bribes, including cash, in 2011 and 2012, and had accepted pricey hotel stays, dinners, parties, and prostitute services provided to him and other Navy officials from Leonard Glenn Francis in exchange for getting lucrative ship husbanding contracts steered to Glenn's firm, Glenn Defense Marine Asia. So that is the Fat Leonard scandal as it has unfolded. On Tuesday, Haas pled guilty to a single count of conspiracy to commit bribery, a felony charge that could net him 5 years in prison and a $250,000 fine, according to court records. He also agreed to pay restitution to the government of $90,968.82. Also this past week, retired Chief Petty Officer Brooks Alonzo Parks, who was also indicted with Haas in August of 2018, pled guilty to one count of conspiracy to commit bribery, according to court records. His sentencing is scheduled for August 28th. He was originally indicted on a single count of conspiracy to commit honest fraud services. Parks, who retired in 2016, had worked at Afloat Training Group Western Pacific from 2008 to 2013. From 2005 to 2008, he was the 7th Fleet's Logistic Lead Petty Officer, a job that included managing parts of the logistics budget and signing and processing invoices. No bueno, man. The Navy. Not good. Not good. The, let's see. Next story is Transcom pulls back, listen to this, a $7 billion contract to privatize military household goods move. Why do you think that is? Yeah, you heard that right. Seven with a B as in billion. Now, I would have to say this. You know, the privatization of base housing has been a fairly mixed bag. Okay. Do you really want to go down that road with moving to? Anyway, a $7.2 billion contract for outsourcing the management of moving service members' household goods has been pulled back by the U.S. Transportation Command. The contract, which was awarded to American Roll-On Roll-Off Carrier Group of Parsippany, New Jersey, was to cover a 9-month transition period and a 3-year base period. But if all the options are exercised, the contract would be worth about $20 billion over 9 years. Transcom officials are reviewing reported allegations made by an interested party, according to a Transcom spokesman. Quote, an interested party has presented U.S. Transcom with information that they believe should have been considered in the global household goods contract award decision. U.S. Transcom intends to take corrective action to consider this new information, gather facts, and conduct a review of the award. Now, I don't think that they can do that unless some type of fraud or some type of material information disclosure was omitted. So, anyway, $7 billion, that's not, I don't know, you know, how you view $7 billion, but to me, that's not a small amount of money. All right, the top five stories in Early Bird, and then Lynch, Kenny, and Will Cosentini. You'll hear from them. Number one, Trump opposes changing base's name for Confederate generals. I don't really get that. Why wouldn't, you know, he could always have his day in court, right? I mean, all he does is, for, I think, a lot of people that are considering, that will vote for president, it makes him sound more tone deaf, right? And it's not like he can't say, look, I'm going to let the Army study this and make a recommendation to me, and ultimately I will approve or disapprove that recommendation, right, based on what the Army says, right? And then it's a non-issue. So anyway, I told you, bedside manner, not so much, okay? Number two, now he looks like this. Now he looks decisive. Now he looks decisive. Nice. Okay. Number two, Defense Committee Chairman expresses profound frustration with Esper. And this is, we talked about this yesterday, but the House Armed Service Committee Chair, Adam Smith, invited Secretary Esper and Chairman Milley to testify before the committee on events around last week, which, you know, we're going to play political charades. And both Secretary Esper and Chairman Milley declined. Now, I thought, like, they're supposed to testify. I mean, is it normal that they decline to testify? I'm not sure. I don't know. Number three, here's what the CENTCOM commander says about the possibility of Syria, Afghanistan withdrawals. Now, that is General Kenneth McKenzie, right? Marine type. We know him from stuff he said at the Pentagon. The general who runs CENTCOM said that with any withdrawal from Syria will ultimately be a political decision, while still warning about 10,000 ISIS detainees are located in prison camps in the region, about 2,000 of whom he characterized as hardcore foreign fighters during a Middle East Institute event on Wednesday. I need to go find that. Maybe we should listen to that in its entirety. I like those kind of things. General McKenzie went on to say that U.S. troops are still there to fight ISIS through the Syrian Democratic Force partners. U.S. forces in Syria work with local partners in a region east of the Euphrates River, dubbed the Eastern Syria Security Area. There is also a pocket of U.S. troops further south at a garrison called Al-Tanf. Now, Al-Tanf isn't on the edge of the planet, but you can see the edge from Al-Tanf. It is in the middle of fucking nowhere, right? Additionally, we're there to assist the SDF in maintenance of oil facilities for their use to help them generate income, which could be used for a variety of things, some of which would be to continue operations against ISIS. Over time, Bashar al-Assad, Syrian president, is probably going to turn to the east and increase pressure on us, and we'll deal with that when it happens. How about Libya? When asked about, you know, ultimately what happens, he said at some point we're going to come out, and that's a political decision. We'll be ready to execute those orders when that time comes. On Afghanistan, McKenzie said that the U.S. military is ahead of its timetable to bring the total number of troops in the country down to about 8,600 as negotiated this past winter with the Taliban. But as of right now, McKenzie doesn't see the second part of the drawdown completing on schedule. Quote, "We also agreed that in May of 2021, if conditions will allow, we're prepared to go to zero," he said, noting that those conditions boil down to whether U.S. officials can be assured that attacks against the United States will not be generated from Afghanistan. "Frankly," he goes on, "if you were to ask me my opinion, those conditions have not been fully met, so we'll continue to work there." the threat to the United States is not the Taliban. It's never been the Taliban. It's the entities they allow to live in Afghanistan that threaten us. And really, we're talking about ISIS and Al-Qaeda. He goes on. It is less clear to me that they will take the same action against Al-Qaeda, and only time will tell. Right? And he was asked a question about, would the Taliban get after Al-Qaeda as they have ISIS? And his response was, it's less clear to me. And then he finishes with this. We will know by observation, not things that they say, but things that they do. Those are things I believe that should actually inform our actions going forward. So General McKenzie in the news. Number four, NORAD. F-22s intercept Russian bombers near Alaska. That's a normal event. Must be a slow news day if that's making it in the top five stories. And number five, Transcom pulls back $7 billion contract. We've discussed that. Overseas operations. Again, from General McKenzie. This is a story out of Defense One. Top U.S. general in the Mideast. I do worry about China quite a bit. So here's his comments relative to that. McKenzie's a pretty frank guy, which is, you know, so he's always, you know, whenever he speaks, you know, you always see it, you know, you always see a ton of quotes come out of you always see a ton of quotes come out of those stories. Quote, we see China moving in principally economically, but not completely to establish a beachhead. The fact of the matter is China gets over 50% of their oil through the Straits of Hormuz. There are mass minerals and other deposits in the theater that China would like to have access to. They would prefer to do it under somebody else's security arrangement, but who knows what their design will be in the long run, he said. I think it's a significant factor we need to confront, right? And so that's relative to China in the Middle East. Russia is also attempting to gain influence in the region, McKenzie said, and although it lacks the economic resources Beijing has, they are there. Where they are, it's pretty high intensity. He cited their military involvement in Syria and also in Libya. So, yeah. So let me track that down. I enjoy listening to those kind of things, and I think most people who listen do, especially when you can hear the principles, you know, verbatim. Like you heard the General Milley this morning. It's one thing to hear some Associated Press story relative to it. I like to hear it straight from the horse's mouth. Let's see. From the Associated Press, the Prime Minister of Iraq vows ISIS will never again overrun Iraqi territory. I don't want to say that sounds like bold talk from one-eyed fat man, but okay, the last time ISIS, you know, got its shit together and had space to organize, they rolled into Iraq. And they rolled up a lot of different military organizations. They rolled up a lot of military equipment. And so, yeah, I like it when you say it. I'll love it when you do it. All right. And then there's one more story that talks about General McKenzie again, but we've already talked about that. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Lynch, Kenny, and Cosentini coming next right here on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio. Remember, footnote, recorded last night, so they're not going to be able to address General Milley. More of this fine program coming up next.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders, that's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.